Dad's home in Malahide is the coughing Richard Collins again. Are you okay, Richard? Are you surviving?
I'm just about. I feel like a greenfinch. They're always wheezing.
Anyway, we'll be back with you in a second. And we'll be hearing from Aina Nilauna a little bit later on. But before we get to your emails, Michelle, I should say that I have a mystery recording which we put out on our social media last week. And I'd like to play it for everybody here to see if Niall and Richard, who are real birders, can tell me if they know what it is. Here it comes. Here's the sound. Richard.
Yes, well, of course, it is a ping. And in Middle English, there were consonant changes and P became F and NG became CH. So if you put those into the word ping, you get finch. Finch, chaff, finch. The pinger around the chaff. That's what you're looking at there. It is the bird which gave its name to the whole family of finches. So, a remarkable bird, yeah.
Yep, spot on, Richard. That is indeed the call of a chaffinch, one of the most numerous birds we have in Ireland. On the Dawn Chorus programme each year, we often hear the song of the chaffinch, which mm-hmm. the male sings to defend a territory, to attract a mate and do all of those macho things. But the call is different. So both sexes will give the call, and it's that sort of pink, pink or fink, fink kind of sound that you hear there. It's very characteristic. They make an array of other sounds as well, but it's one of the more common sounds that you'll hear a chaffinch make. And once people get their ear trained in on that, you'll actually hear this all over the Irish countryside. It's a common bird here.
I recorded it at the foot of Musher Moor last week in Cork. Here it is once more. So if you're out for a walk in that region or anywhere else for that matter and you hear this ping sound, you'll know what it is. Now, Michelle Brown, our researcher, is in studio. Michelle, lots of correspondence. Off you go.
Okay, so talking about finches, Sandra Macken in Dublin sent a picture in of a greenfinch, which we put on our website, and some of our eagle-eyed listeners were able to spot the bird wasn't well. Niall, I think you answered some of those queries.
Yes, that's right. A very nice photograph, very well taken, a very beautiful bird, but unfortunately I can tell looking at it that the male greenfinch in the photograph is indeed unwell, and it seems to me to be showing the symptoms and the signs of a disease called trichomoniasis, which has been hitting greenfinches in particular very badly. If you look at the bird in the photograph, you'll see that its feathers are quite fluffed up, but more importantly, it looks kind of wet around its beak. The face is kind of slightly damp and it just looks very lethargic, and it's a very classic symptom of this disease. Now, this disease is no threat to humans or indeed to any of our fellow mammals. So cats, dogs, rabbits, sheep, goats, cows, all of those. None of us can catch it. Most birds don't have a problem with it either, but finches do, and greenfinches in particular. We know from Birdwatch Ireland's annual Irish Garden Bird Survey that greenfinch populations have declined by about 50% over the last 10 years or so because of this disease. So it's a pandemic that's
hitting
them.
What do you do about it? If you come across a bird that has this disease, can you do anything? Can you take it to the vet, for example?
No, unfortunately not. There's no cure for this disease, and the vast majority of the birds that contract it die, and there's nothing can be done about that. But the disease is spread by saliva and by water. It's a waterborne protozoan. So it's not a bacterium or a virus. It's a single-celled organism, a bit like an amoeba, that infects the bird's throats and causes them to swell to the extent that the swelling gets so bad the bird can no longer swallow food and it's starves. What to do if you do see birds in your own garden showing symptoms of this disease, or you find dead greenfinches on the ground? We would urge you to stop feeding the birds for at least 3 weeks in your garden.
Right.
Clean the feeders very, very thoroughly. Horrible as it may sound, the 3 week pause is to allow the infected birds to die, so they don't, when you resume feeding them, they won't be reinfecting the food and spreading to the other birds. It's horrible to think in those terms, but it's the only solution. And if your neighbours are feeding birds, do the same, and ask them to do the same if they can, and also then remove any source of water. So if you have water dishes and all that, clean them out, and scrub them.
And on the subject of feeding birds at this time of year, birds now pretty much have got their nests built, not all of them, but they're busy and they're ready to breed. So should we stop feeding them now?
So this is the time of year when a lot of people do take a break from feeding birds, and it's probably the least important time of year to feed them. You can feed them at this time of year, but there are some caveats with that. Firstly, you want to make sure that if you are continuing to feed birds in your garden, that you don't have your feeders, your bird tables, your feeding stations anywhere near where birds are actually nesting, because the coming and going of so many other birds can really stress them out in their territories. You'll also notice as well that the birds use and visit those feeders far, far less at this time of year. So there's probably no point in feeding them, really. They don't need the boost. There's so much more natural food around at the moment, and it's the time of year when many of our species that would normally be vegetarian, that would feed just on seeds and plant material in the winter months, they are now looking for insect larvae, caterpillars, grubs, that kind of thing, to feed to their chicks. Because for many of these vegetarian species, their chicks are actually carnivorous for the first few weeks of life because it's much higher in protein. That's how they grow so rapidly. At this time of year, you really can let nature do its own thing. And the best time then to resume the feeding, if you are taking a break, is in the autumn time, around September, October. That's when the weather starts to change. It's harder for the birds to find natural food, and they can really do with the boost then.
Richard.
Theropod dinosaurs. There was a paper 10 years ago, something like that, which claimed that theropod dinosaurs had this disease. They died out 66 million years ago. It's kind of the avian black death. The black death used to strike us like that. Every few years or every decade or so, there would be an outbreak of the black death. It would come, it would wipe out a section of the population, and the rest would struggle on to the next one. It's a nasty thing. I wonder if I don't know. Somebody should clarify this, some listener. Is canker in pigeons the same thing, or is flounce in kestrels the same thing? Are my wires crossed?
I've certainly heard a connection with canker, with pigeon canker, as pigeon breeders would often call it, Richard. And I know that wild pigeons can also contract trichomoniasis. I have heard of certainly hawks getting it. I haven't come across kestrels getting it, but that's not to say that they can't. I would think that kestrels are less likely to come into contact with it in a wild state because they don't really prey on birds to a significant extent. They will hunt some birds, but it's the sparrowhawk that really specializes in feeding on birds, while the kestrel specializes in feeding on small mammals and sometimes lizards, where they can find them as well. But yeah, I think those diseases are connected. It's all to do with these swellings in the throat and this organism that causes these problems. There is a related disease. It's actually a sexually transmitted disease in humans, but it's a different species of this parasite and it's not connected with it. So people don't need to worry about that at all.
Of course, this again is a disease of affluence among birds. In other words, bird tables and feeders and things were. And of course, the greenfinch is a very sociable bird. And the greenfinch then comes to bird tables with all this lovely food there and so on. And that means that a lot of them come together in one place and they're much more likely to spread infection. It's like living in cities with us. When we colonized North America or took over North America, we decimated the unfortunate native people because they hadn't lived in cities and they had no resistance to our diseases. Something the same is kind of happening to the greenfinches. They come into the bird tables in the gardens and they pick up this deadly disease.
Michelle.
Lots of emails complimenting Terry Flanagan for his programme on magpies that went out on Easter Monday.
Yes.
On the subject of magpies, Grania was on to say, I drove out of my house onto a minor road in County Meath. In front of me, I stopped my car. There were about 18 magpies on the road. There was nothing on the road like squash vermin. They looked like they were having a chat. It was about 6:15 p.m. A number of tall trees around me, plenty of crow's nests, but I've never witnessed that many magpies altogether. Any explanation?
This was something that came up in the programme, and it was actually you who addressed that in the documentary, Richard. Explain more.
Well, yes, in the documentary we were concerned with ceremonial gatherings, which I don't... In a ceremonial gathering of magpies, they're nesting, and a pair flies into another pair's territory. They fly in out of the blue and a row develops. The resident pair try to oust the intruders, and what have all the other magpies gather to watch. They're rather like us. They're nosy and they're watching what's happening to the neighbours. And usually in 95% of the times on those cases where it has been studied, the resident pair wins out and the intruders are kicked out. However, I do not think that this is a case of the ceremonial gathering. The numbers are too big for one thing. I think magpies often gather in fields and places before roosting. They're gregarious birds. They like to team up with each other and chatter and all. The word gazette, you know, it comes from gazza, the Italian for a magpie. Chattering. The chattering gazette is a kind of a tabloidy kind of newspaper, specializing in scandals, and that is comes from the magpie. But anyway, they then all gather together and head off into their normal roost. roost. I think that's probably what happens. It may not be. But one doesn't know. Their ways are not our ways. Well, not entirely our ways, shall we say.
No. Anyway, go on, yeah.
Niall, Annette McCormack was on. She sent in a lovely picture of a peacock butterfly and she is wondering, is it early? She sent it in on the 1st of April.
The 1st
of April.
It wasn't an April Fool's, no.
No.
I'm quite right too, because it is the time of year when you do see these peacock butterflies starting to appear. It's a very striking butterfly, one of our most beautiful, without question. One of the easiest to identify as well, and also a very common one. For those who don't know it, it's that butterfly that's mainly red. It's got some black and yellow markings in the upper wing, but the most notable thing you'd see is these vivid blue false eye spots they have on their wings. It's very, very distinctive in that regard. It's a butterfly that overwinters in Ireland, hibernates as an adult. So butterflies can be divided into different groups that hibernate as an adult, as the peacock does, another one, the small tortoiseshell does the same. You have other ones then that overwinter as eggs, others that overwinter as the pupae in the chrysalis, and sometimes as caterpillars. So there are lots of different ways of doing that. And this is what happens then is the peacock butterflies that have been hibernating for the winter, when the weather starts to get warmer and the days get longer, they gradually wake up. So the 1st of April, it is quite early, though with climate change, we are seeing butterflies emerging earlier than they would have in the past. Now, that's a bit of a gamble for that peacock butterfly that may not have paid off, given that the weekend just after that there were massive storms, yep. Storm Kathleen across Ireland. That's not good news for a butterfly. So it may have perished in that, and the peacocks that didn't wake up may be doing better. But that's the way nature works. It sort of swings and roundabouts and survival of the fittest. What happens with the peacock butterflies then is that when they wake up in the spring, they then mate and the female lays the eggs, and that's the job done. Those butterflies can then happily die. They're surplus to requirements, they're not needed anymore. And then there's a period of time in the middle of the summer, usually around the second half of June into July, when peacock butterflies just disappear completely. They're all gone. And it's a few weeks before the next batch of adults then appears. And so we start seeing them again in the latter half of the summer, then through into the early part of the autumn. And around September, that's when they go to sleep again. So some other butterflies, like a relative of theirs called the Painted Lady, they actually migrate all the way back to Africa. They go, well, they've never been there before. They hatched out in Europe. They're flying all the way back to the Atlas Mountains and they spend the winter there. But what happens with our peacock butterflies is they hunker down, they go to sleep or into a torpid state for the winter and then repeat the whole process again the following April.
Richard, you have a Buddleia outside your front door, if I'm not mistaken. Any butterflies around?
I do. I saw a butterfly yesterday there, and by the time I got to it, it had given me the slip, so I couldn't identify it entirely. It was I don't know. I better not be holding forth. And whereof one cannot speak, thereof one must be silent, said Wittgenstein. But anyway, it always seems to me that the peacock butterfly is slightly misnamed. He opens the wings and the two big discs up above and two discs further down frighten a predator away. They look like the eyes of an owl or something that's going to attack them. And this seems to be the purpose, insofar as we can talk about purpose in nature. This seems to be why they have these discs. But that isn't what the peacock uses its lovely discs for. It uses them for breeding to impress the ladies. So it's an interesting thing. Another thought about this early coming out occurs to me. There's some indicator in some parts of the range. Peacocks produce only one brood. Peacock butterflies produce one brood in the season. But in some places, there's a partial second brood. And in Britain, I believe, there is a growing body of peacock butterflies that go for a second brood. Now, this is a very early butterfly here. I wonder what David Nash or people like that would think. Are we seeing perhaps the beginnings of a second brood component in Ireland?
Oh, maybe we are. Maybe that'll be a good thing. Michelle?
Daniel Hogan was sending in a picture of a tree creeper and says they're very difficult to photograph. They don't stay still.
I've only ever seen one in my life and it was in the Phoenix Park, Niall. So a tree creeper is a bird for the benefit of the listener. And what does it do?
It creeps up trees, as the name would suggest. Never down trees, always up trees. Mm. And their whole lives revolve around bark on a tree. They love trees that have particularly craggy bark. And what they do is they feed on that bark. They have a sort of a curved beak, which they use to probe in behind crevices in the bark to get little insects and larvae, things in there. They sleep at night by wedging themselves into crevices in the bark. They build their nests out of bark flaps in the tree. So they really are remarkable birds from that point of view. Quite quite common in Ireland, but difficult to see because, well, two reasons really, and very difficult to photograph too. One is the camouflage. They are also the colour of bark, so they blend in very, very well. But also when danger or potential danger like a human approaches, very often rather than fly away the way that most birds would do, what the tree creeper does is it just edges around the tree. Just so what happens is then the trunk of the tree is always between you and it, so it's hard to see. And what they do is they really go up trees, spiralling up, then fly down to the bottom of the next tree and go work their way up like that way as well.
And in one direction only?
In one direction, always up, never down.
But they always fly off.
They always fly off, that's right. Woodpeckers do the same, and famously a type of bird called a nuthatch, which we don't have here in Ireland.
Yeah.
It's quite common in Britain across most of the continent, and many other species in Europe and Asia and the Americas as well. What they do is that they will go up and down tree trunks. So they're the only birds around here that do that. We don't have those in Ireland.
And finally, Michelle.
Marina Everty from Stockholm was on to know the date of the Dawn Chorus this year, and she celebrated her 80th birthday in Cork last year and said it was divine to be home.
Oh, well, happy birthday, first of all, but she's living in Stockholm in Sweden.
That's correct.
Well, it's not fantastic to think we have listeners in Sweden. Tell all your friends. Anyway, Sunday 5th of May is the date for this year's Dawn Chorus from midnight to 7 a.m. And we'll tell you more about it as we get closer to the time.